My name is Rachel, and I'm from USA Los Angeles. I'm here in Oroville after seeing it on a Facebook ad that a friend of mine put. And I did my research, and it looked like such a great place to come be a part of, learn from. So I brought my son, and here we are.
You're from Los Angeles, but you carry an interesting heritage.
So my heritage, my mother is black and white, Irish white, and black from her father. Her father is 100%, like, well, 50-50 Choctaw Indian, because his mother is 100% Choctaw Indian, and his father is of African descent, but I'm actually not sure from where. And so that makes my mother half black, half white from America. In America, if you're a one percentage of black, that means you're black. In America. You know, it's, I grew up mostly with the black African-American side of my family because my mother, she was Irish white American. And from her family, they were very racist. Like, you're not allowed to even talk to black people. So when my grandfather met my grandmother, she was actually leaving Iowa for a while, which is where she is from, to get away from whatever it was she was trying to get away from out there. She had my mother and her brother, my uncle, with my grandfather. But my mother, she's very light, very fair-skinned. Some of you would probably never even think she's black, you know. But because they were even a percentage of black, when my mother was 3 years old, my mom left. And she couldn't take them with her, and she had to go back to Iowa where her white family was. And when she left my mom at 3 years old, my mom never seen her again until she was like 35 years old. You know what I mean? And it was after, you know, we had to find her and search for her and everything. So she didn't really grow up with a mother or truly understanding that side of her history, because even though she was half white, half black, she was still black. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no.
And so, and in America, it's a little bit harder, especially in those times, because it was illegal to even be with a black guy. But with my mother, you know, even though she's fair-skinned, she was still not dark enough. She was not black enough, but she was not white. So a lot of times, like, she speaks fluent Spanish. We lived in the barrio, you know what I mean? And she was more thought of as Mexican opposed to anything, you know, because she looked like she could possibly be Mexican. And where we lived was right there on the border with the huge population of the Mexican population.
So what were you doing in L.A. before you sort of came
here? Man, I've done so much in my life. I promise you I have. Any life, I've had so many lives in this one life. I had my own business. I had a maid service that I you know, ran. And that was, you know, having my own business was one in itself. I was going to law school. My kids, you know, my kids, I had three kids, you know, two of them were grown-ups now. And then I had my 12-year-old, so I was raising them. And then I've always traveled. Los Angeles was probably one of many places I've been in this life. And I met Dino, and he wanted to more so travel the world. And with me only having, you know, my one son left, I was all for it. So off we go.
So you've been to multiple places before you came to Oroville, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, we've been, like, we're coming here from Sri Lanka, which we spent, I spent 2 weeks, a little more, in Sri Lanka. And before that, I was in Thailand for a couple of months. Before that, you know, that's when we were coming from America. But even within, my son is 12 years old. He's probably been to 24 schools in between homeschooling and everything, you know what I mean? We've been to Cuba. We've traveled all over the United States of America. I used to be in the Army, so we traveled in the Army. You know, I was married to a military guy previously, so I've traveled there. I've lived a lot of places.
What do you think is that, what fascinates you to travel so much?
When I was 12 years old, I ended up in an exchange student program in Japan. And after coming from a very poor area in the United States of America, not even knowing anything outside of your block, and then going to Japan, well, real quick, backstory. My mother left us when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because she just didn't want that life. By the time I was 8, she had 6 kids, and she was only 24 years old. And that was really tough for her. And she just left one day, you know? So that was a lot, like, my anger, my rage, all this stuff. The first time I ever went to school, I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because my grandma put us in school, and they put me in my grade. And I ended up skipping grades, being in a gifted program. But it was like a mix of both worlds, where on one end, I was fighting every single day because I was so angry. On the other end, I was running track and making straight A's. So it's like people just didn't know what to do with me. And by the time I was 12 years old, I had dropped out of school, mm-hmm. and decided that I know, like, I just was, and I left home because it was a bad place for, a bad environment for me, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I ended up running into one of my teachers who took concern with me and put me, got my grandma to sign papers, put me in an exchange student program, and off I go to Japan, very first time by myself at 12 years old. You know, and I'm in Japan, and at 12 years old, I'm there with my military family that I'm with, and about 3 months in, I hear someone call my name. And I had already changed my name and told all my friends my name was something else, you know what I mean? Because I felt like I wanted to be a different person, mm-hmm. a better me. Mm-hmm. I was trying to work on my fighting, my anger, my everything. And when I heard someone say that name, I looked around, I didn't see anyone, and then I heard my name again, and it was my mother, who I had not seen mm-hmm. since the time I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? And so I was so shocked, I was so happy, I was so emotional, I was thinking, oh yay, I found mom, now we're going to save all of us, my sisters, my brothers. It didn't end up happening like that, but it was in that moment that I realized how truly big and small the world was. Of all the places I could be in my life, I'm in an island on the Pacific coast in a place that I didn't even think there would be black people at, you know what I mean? Before I got there, of course. You know, that I had never been to find someone I hadn't seen who I've always wanted to see since I was 8 years old. So for me, that begin my love of travel, my love of the world, my love of just wanting to know other cultures, other things, other people. And it's been with me ever since. Like, I just have a wandering spirit to where even after I've had my children, we've traveled, I want them to see things because I don't ever want them and I to get complacent. Like, if something's going wrong or if you're somewhere you don't like, you can think outside that box. Mm-hmm. There's so much more world, so many more people, mm-hmm. you know, so many more things to explore opposed to where you're at mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like a lifeline. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're ever in a place where, you know, like you feel like there's nothing else, I wanted them to know that there's so much more. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
That's amazing. How long were you in Japan for then?
I was in Japan for about 3.5, almost 4 years, mm-hmm. until I ended up pregnant mm-hmm. with my first son. Mm-hmm. And I got kicked off the island then, you know, but I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So when I got kicked off the island, you know, my mother disowned me. I couldn't be in the track or the academic program. I went back to the States and I went back to the States and that I really was kind of homeless. So I was going from couch surfing from friend to friend, I remember. And maybe about 2 months before my birthday, I had my son. Mm-hmm. And I remember 2 weeks after I had him, my track coaches, because track was a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. They were holding my baby while I was running a track meet just so that I could get a scholarship into college. You know, oh my God. So I ended up graduating at 16 with a track scholarship, an academic scholarship, because all the things I did in Japan, just all my academics, was more than what the States, like, I had enough credits.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, I think, my biggest champion was education. Like, throughout me trying to figure out my life, my anger, my rage, my family, things that I could not control, you know, because of my age and my environment, I always tried to stay focused on my academics in between that because I felt like that was my way out. Mm-hmm, you know mm-hmm, what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so at that age, I ended up in foster care. Mm-hmm. And foster care is like CPS, Child Protective Services, for the United States. I ended up in group homes, and that was probably some of the hardest years because when you're in Child Protective Services, not only, first, I was black. you know, and people think of black people in the region I was in a certain type of way. They think of black women. Then, you know, when you have a kid, you're thought of another type of way, mm-hmm. you know. And when you're in foster care, you have to be a better parent than parents who suck. Mm-hmm. That are not, who, you know, you could be on drugs. As long as you're a grown-up, they're going to give you chance after chance. Mm-hmm. But when you're a kid and you have no one to advocate for you, nobody who wants you, no parents, no anyone, and you have a baby, you're not just foster care. Your kid is foster care. Mm-hmm. So they get to tell you what to do with your kid. They get to tell you how to raise your kid. And for me, that was hard because I was doing so much more. I was in college. I had a job, you know, and the advocate that I had did not get along. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So she would move me to like places in the middle of nowhere. So I had to drop out of school. I would have to quit my job, you know, because she felt like I should not be a parent and wanted to adopt my kid out, mm-hmm. you know, and I would say no. So they would put me in positions to where now they can come in and take my kid because now I'm not working. No, I'm not in school. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard because I was constantly fighting the system. Mm-hmm. And a system that's been there so much longer than your age is sometimes very hard to fight, mm-hmm. you know, especially mm-hmm. when they don't want to help you. Mm-hmm. The lawyers are not there for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't have anyone advocating for you, mm-hmm. you know, and no one that cares that much. So for me, I think when I was 17, I had another child. Mm-hmm. You know, I had two kids by 17, and I decided to let my children go, like my son go stay with his, I called his father, and his father said, you talk to his mother, I let him go stay with his mom. And because I felt like, okay, I can easily get them back from their grandma opposed to having to take on the whole state of mm-hmm. Arizona, you know, and I let my daughter stay with my uncle because he was like, yo, I'm here for you, you know, I can easily get her back from my uncle opposed to fighting the whole state, and I made a plan to go into the military. Mm-hmm. And so at 18 years old, I went into the military. My children, you know, went there, and I went to basic training, AIT. I was sending them all my money, and I was supposed to go to Germany. But right before I went to Germany, my son's grandmother stopped talking to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't find my daughter. So me coming from the background where my mother left me and I didn't have a father or anyone, I couldn't possibly even continue without my children. Mm-hmm. You know, so I ended up at that time getting out of the military and going back to fight for my children. So working everything, man, I worked so hard. Well, my daughter, I ended up losing her because they kidnapped her and they went away. They left. And yes, they left and I couldn't find them. The state couldn't find them, but they got a lawyer. They had lots of money at that time. You know what I mean? They're rich people. And they went behind my back with another lawyer in another place and severed my rights and adopted her without me ever knowing. Yes. So I found that was very devastating for me, but I couldn't crumble. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I still had another kid I had to fight for. So after it took me about 3 years of fighting. They wouldn't even give me a lawyer. I had to pay for people to come to my house and visit my house to say it was okay. I had to handwrite all my legal documents and turn them in to the state and just advocate before a judge finally said, wow, okay, I'm gonna give you back your kid because I've never even seen someone fight so hard. I mean, I wasn't on drugs. I didn't drink at the time. I didn't even party. I worked. You know, I was in school. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get custody of him back. Mm-hmm. And once I got custody of him back, by 19, I had my third son. You know, once I got custody of him back, I rejoined the military. I got married and I left. You know what I mean? Because I didn't want to stay in a place that I felt so much mm-hmm. like negative energy that did so much harm to me, mm-hmm. you know, because so many people that I grew up with that I seen that got caught up in the system, mm-hmm. it's like they never get out. Mm-hmm. They're with it their whole life, mm-hmm. you know, their kids, everything, mm-hmm. like they're always involved. And I didn't want that, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted mm-hmm. to be able to start new mm-hmm. and represent myself the way I wanted to represent myself. So then I joined the army, I left, you know, and we just been traveling ever since. So it was a lot at a young age, you know, and I think what really got me through that time was my spirit, You know, I felt, I won't say religious because I've never been a religious person, but I've always been tuned into the spiritual side of things, the universal side of things. And that helped me so much because I remember when I was a young girl, right before I had my first son, I went to visit my grandfather. He was old. He was like 90, 95 years old, and I loved him so much, you know. We had such a great relationship. He was my mother's father. And I remember I was pregnant. I went in one day to him, and I had been homeless, going through things. And I said, all right, Grandpa, you know, I'll be back, because the next week was Christmas. And he was like, no, I already had a dream of when you're coming back. And when you come back, you're going to have that baby. I'm thinking, Grandpa, this baby is not due for another month. I'll be back, you know. And he says, all right, and I left. And the next time I was walking through the door, at that moment, I remembered what he said because I had my baby. And it was past Christmas. It was January, you know. And I broke down crying to him. I was like, man, Grandpa, you know, do you do dreams about me? Like, what's going on? And he told me, he's like, man, I've already dreamt about you in your life. You know, he said, you're going to be so successful. You're going to do so great. Yeah, I was like, well, when? Because I was in the middle of a storm. And he said to me, he said, if I told you when, would you wait for it? You know, he says, you don't wait for it. Go out there and live your life to the best that you can and just know, have a knowing that it's already yours, it's already coming, and one day you will realize it will come into realization for you. Mm-hmm. And since that day, when I go through storms in my life and things in my life, and I remember that conversation, and I say to me, well, my grandfather dreams true dreams, and he said that I'm going to realize, you know, what I'm supposed to have in my life, and this doesn't look like what it is, so I have to keep going. Mm-hmm. I have to keep, you know, finding it, you know, until it's there, so it helps me to get through, yeah, like, you know, hard things.
Yeah.
Oroville is so great. I like the spiritual energy here. There are people that I run into sometimes that I feel their spirit, you know, like the spirit of goodness and greatness, and that's hard. I don't normally run into that, and I feel it so much that my hair starts standing up, and I feel like I want to learn more about that. I want to be able to sustain that feeling, mm-hmm, to find what that feels like, mm-hmm, of sustainment, instead of having moments of joys, moments of happiness, moment of enlightenment. I want a sustainment of that. So mm-hmm, that's what I think. I feel like I'm here in Oroville to find.
How long are you going to be in Oroville for?
Well, right now I have a visa for 6 months, you know? So for 6 months at least.
Okay.
You know, and then we'll go from there as far as renewing it and maybe staying
so
longer.
So you're in Oroville for 6 months?
Yes, I'm in Oroville, wow, for 6 months.
Okay.
You know, when I came across it, I was like, I'm going there. Like, that's where I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. Not only for the spirituality, but I think for monetary reasons, you know, mm-hmm, what I'm saying? Like, for me to be somewhere where what I have coming in as far as money is enough to where I don't have to just survive. Now I can give into the other things like my spirituality, mm-hmm, or other things that make me balanced and make me whole, opposed to just having to work, mm-hmm, and only focus on working, only focus on surviving, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? Because, mm-hmm, sometimes without that balance, you feel depressed and empty, mm-hmm, and angry and sad and everything. And this place allows me, you know, with the cost of living and everything, to be able to find a balance to focus on the other things that are just as important.
How do you like India so far? Have you only been in Oroville?
I come here through Chennai. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, India, it's, I will say,
overwhelming?
I won't say it's overwhelming because I've been so many places. It's just, it's different in the sense of, I think it's my own expectations that I had. Mm-hmm. Does that, mm-hmm, make sense? Mm-hmm. It's my own expectations that I had in the sense of what I thought humanly expected opposed to what is. Like, for me, the biggest thing I think that I have to get through is some of the physical things, like, mm-hmm, the trash on the road. Mm-hmm. Should I say that? Mm-hmm. But that's true. Like, I think that was so different than, mm-hmm, what I thought. Don't get me wrong, there's trash in a lot of countries on the side of the road that haven't figured it out. But I thought coming to Oroville, it would be different because mm-hmm. it's talked about recycling. It's talked mm-hmm. about, you know, living greener, healthier, and the spirituality. And for me, you know what I mean? Growing up and through different things, it's always, okay, this when the spiritual starts to match the outside. The inside matches the outside. So when I want my inside to match the outside, but when I look around on the outside and I see so much trash and so many things that are not clean, then it takes me back a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It gives me a pause mm-hmm. as something that I need to maybe work on, overcome, and maybe, you know, I don't know how long I can live looking at that. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I want to get to spiritual and be in a great place, I still need to see beauty in more than just the spiritual. I need to feel like when I'm in my environment, like, oh, mm-hmm. like, I love being here.
You need a beautiful environment.
Right. Mm-hmm. I need a beautiful, peaceful environment mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. You know? So, that's different.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you so much for talking.